Welcome to Now. I'm David Berg.
And I'm Lin Yang.
This week, a Washington icon has reopened nearly 3 years after being damaged by an earthquake.
Apple and Samsung have been locked in a battle over smartphones. We'll look at the latest decisions.
Alibaba hopes to do business in the United States. What will that mean for the Chinese company?
There's a new app for your smartphone that can alert doctors if you need help.
When an individual has a change or there's an identified change, the health system could be alerted and said, Mr. Jones or Mrs. Jones is in need of an intervention.
What can studying fish teach us about financial markets?
We'll visit a vintage car show in Beverly Hills.
And Nintendo's new game has caused a backlash in the gay community.
That's all coming up on this Tuesday edition of Now. On Monday, one of the icons of the United States, the Washington Monument, reopened to the public nearly 3 years after it was damaged by an earthquake in August of 2011.
The 169-meter-tall monument has been closed so engineers could conduct an extensive restoration to make sure the obelisk was safe.
Sally Jewell is the U.S. Secretary of the Interior. She says the monument represents something special for all Americans and all visitors.
So today is about celebrating the reopening of the Washington Monument and the great partnerships and individuals that make this day possible. But to me, it's also about celebrating the everyday heroes who may not have a monument, but would make George Washington very proud of this country today.
The repairs cost $15 million, with half coming from the U.S. Congress and the other half from a private donor.
That donor is David Rubenstein, the co-founder of the Carlyle Group Financial Services Company. He says that giving to the monument's repair was a way to pay back his country for what it has done for him and for his family.
I only did what other Americans who have the good fortune that I have had would have done, presented with the same opportunity.
The monument reopened to visitors Monday afternoon.
So have you visited Washington? Did you visit the monument before the earthquake?
Maybe you plan to visit it now?
Now you can tell us your story by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
Or send us an email at voaasia@voanews.com.
And you can send us your photos too. Maybe you took a selfie in front of the monument. Well, you can send that to us on our Facebook page. Or you can put it on our Twitter feed. Our address on Twitter is @NowVOAShow. Lynn, have you ever been up in the Washington Monument?
No, I haven't, but I should have. You
what
have?
What do you mean you
have
should you? Have? Because yeah, I have, but I've lived here for 25 years.
You know, I've lived here for 4 years now.
Yeah.
It's one of the things you should do, but because you live in the city, you're like, oh, I can go to that later.
Yeah.
I'll just, you keep put it off.
Well, see, that was one of the things that this whole earthquake kind of made people step back. They're like, wait a minute, the monument was damaged, you know?
Yeah. How's the view up there?
Well, it's the highest point in downtown Washington, so it's 169 meters up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it has the little lights on the top, and it has this little thing called the Pyramidion, which is way up on the point.
Mm.
And I actually, it's funny because there were some folks here from China, and they asked me if I could take their picture with the big pencil.
Oh, okay.
Because it looks kind of like a giant sharpened pencil, although it's made out of stone. But the view from up there is really quite astounding. You know, if you get up there, they have these little windows in each of the sides.
Ooh.
And they have little plaques that, you know, kind of tell you what you're looking at.
Okay.
But, you know, you've walked the mall, right?
Mm-hmm.
You walked into the Lincoln Memorial or
Definitely.
The Congress building.
Yeah.
Well, when you're up there, it's like, oh, that's not far away. It's just right there.
Yeah,
you know, because you're,
so
you know,
small.
You're way up in the air.
Yeah,
but
there are two different colors on the monument. Have you ever noticed?
Yes, that's because the money ran out.
Yeah, I think so.
They would
so they have to wait for a little bit, and they cannot get the original color of the stones. They have to change to another one from Connecticut.
Yeah, well, the when they quarried the stone, it was a different kind of stone that they had to
use.
You know that there's
actually adds a flavor to it. I like it.
It does.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, sometimes people go,
What's happening? Wait,
what happened there? We ran out of money. And
you know quite a bit about this town.
Well, yeah, you know, 25 years in one place, you know.
And you should definitely visit D.C.
Absolutely. Try to come when the cherry blossoms are out by the tidal basin, but the city's beautiful anytime you come, even in the snow, which we got to see this year. So let us know your thoughts. Send us an email, voaasia@voanews.com. And, of course, you can always log on to our Facebook page. That's VOA Asia. And speaking of Facebook, you might have heard Manny Eck and I talking about whether Facebook can make you happy or sad on Mondays the past couple of weeks. And we asked for your comments, and we've got some here. Someone by the name of Ket Bong Pham Win. I'm assuming that's a Vietnamese name.
I guess.
Spelled like Vietnamese, but I couldn't find out where he's from, where she's from. Says, using Facebook can make people happier, but it can also separate the family. We can chat, post everything we want to, relax after the time of hard work. It's also a nice place for us to share everything we want. But it will be the reason to make the parents separated. A wife can suddenly find the guilty contents between her husband and the other lady, or vice versa.
Oh, gosh.
So in my opinion, we should consider Facebook as an intrusion to play and shouldn't depend on it so much. And, of course, if you're having an assignation, probably not a good idea to post pictures of your girlfriend. Okay. Also, Rot Pie says that using Facebook makes him happy indeed. It's important not only for individuals, but also for societies. Many people spend part of their time on it, even working time.
True.
Get the boss
button.
But
that's part of our work. Okay.
Yeah. Well, as a journalist, now we have an excuse. As a journalist,
Facebook.
It's part of our work. As someone in an engineering firm, perhaps not so much. This, I think, using Facebook makes people really important and makes people happy. Mustafa Motaganasab said, for those who are in restricted societies, or let's say in a restricted community, Facebook can be a kind of entertainment. So what do you think? You can, of course, let us know by posting to our Facebook page, and that is VOA Asia.
Or send us a tweet. Our address there is at now VOA Show.
Do you have a smartphone? Is it an Apple iPhone or maybe one of the many Samsung models?
The two companies have been locked in court battles over copyright infringement, and the battles continue this month.
A jury handed down a mixed verdict in the latest case, saying that both companies had violated the other company's copyrights.
But neither company got everything it wanted.
Brian Love is an assistant law professor at the Santa Clara University School of Law. He says that Apple might have won some of the case, but Samsung continues to win the war.
Given the size of these parties and the amount of money that was at stake, the amount of money that Apple was asking for, this actually comes in at somewhere around 6% of the amount of money that they actually asked for. And on the whole, it's hard not to view this as a defensive victory for Samsung.
Love says that the prolonged battle between the two companies' court fights, which will continue, are ultimately hurting both Apple and Samsung and their customers.
These are companies that make the most innovative phones on the market, and they're spending hundreds of millions of dollars on legal fees fighting these lawsuits. That's all money that they could be using to hire additional engineers, to do additional R&D, to put out more products, and to put out newer products faster. And instead, they're spending all of that money on lawyers and litigation that at the end of the day feels rather wasteful.
Brian Love says that even though juries have levied heavy fines, Apple's ultimate goal, capturing the lion's share of the smartphone market, remains elusive.
What they'd like to do is try to get permanent injunctions issued from the court that would actually block the sale of some Samsung products. Now, so far, Apple has been very unsuccessful at doing so. They've been relatively successful at winning monetary damages. But at the end of the day, monetary damages are not going to stop Samsung. They can absorb the amount of money that the juries are handing down. With actually winning sales bans, it seems unlikely that Apple will get what it's set out to do.
So what about you? Do you think these court fights are helpful or hurtful?
Let us know your opinion by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And we're also on Twitter. Our address there is at now VOA Show.
Tomorrow way too far away, and we can't get back yesterday. But we young right now, we got right now. So get up right now, 'cause all we got is right now.
Last week, China's leading e-commerce company, Alibaba, filed registration papers with the U.S. Security and Exchange Commission for an initial public offering of stock.
This sets the stage for one of the tech industry's biggest IPOs ever, perhaps even more than Facebook when it went public 2 years ago.
More than 600 million Chinese, nearly half the country's population, used the internet in 2013.
Alibaba says it expects that to rise to nearly 800 million people in just a couple of years.
Last year, Alibaba, founded by Jack Ma in 1999, handled nearly $250 billion in sales in China for more than 230 million online customers.
That's more than Amazon and eBay combined, and it accounts for 80% of the e-commerce activity in China.
Scott Kennedy is the director of Indiana University's Research Center for Chinese Politics and Business. He says Alibaba is on the leading edge of e-commerce.
Simply introducing e-commerce into China in the way that they did was new. They also have started promoting online financing outside the standard banking system. And Jack Ma, one of the leaders of and founders of Alibaba himself, has recently created one of the largest philanthropic gifts ever in China. So in many ways, this is a path-breaking company.
Kennedy says that Alibaba shouldn't face some of the problems that other Chinese companies have faced when they tried to enter the U.S. market.
For China, they've had a string of problems with Chinese companies listed in the U.S., and Alibaba is part of a new wave of listings which might help rebuild their reputation so that they can participate more effectively in global capital markets.
Kennedy says Chinese companies are learning to become more responsive to shareholders and foreign customers, and that has resulted in greater transparency.
To the extent that they're Chinese and they carry that with them, and China's reputation for invasion of privacy, that's obviously a question. But compared to other companies in China, they have a pretty strong reputation. They've had some issues that they've had to deal with, but I think their learning curve has been relatively strong.
Are you going to buy the stock, David?
No.
Why? It's a huge company, 80% of Chinese e-commerce. Do you know how many people we have in China?
1.3 billion, mm-hmm. I think, something like that.
Yeah.
Well, but see, that's the thing. I'm more of a conservative. I'm what they call risk-averse in investments circles. You know, I like things that are solid, like gold and silver.
Oh, those
and,
kind.
You know, utilities and things that people will always need. You know, safe stuff that makes decent money. Doesn't make the big money that some of the more speculative stuff makes. But it keeps money in my pocket.
Yeah.
So. And I'm looking towards, you know, I'm going to retire one day. I want to have a long-term income.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm more conservative. I don't know if I would invest in Alibaba or not. It's going to be a huge company.
It is. Bloomberg valued its value now is nearly $170 billion. It's going to surpass $250 billion after it.
It's going to be a huge company. And that's the thing. You know, Jack Ma, apparently, he is, you know, convinced that the competition for e-commerce, you know, people think, well, is it like Google? Is it like that? No.
No, it's Amazon.
It's like Amazon and eBay kind of combined into one website where everybody goes.
Yeah.
And, you know,
basically in China, everybody uses it.
Yeah.
My dad uses it.
Really?
He buys things from online all the time because it's cheaper.
Right.
And then it's the same quality. It's like, why not?
No. I must know what this, you know, does this thing for my TV work? How does it work? You know.
But I think they face a really big challenge about dealing with the logistics. Because it's a big problem in China before the roads and everything are fine.
Right.
But everything in China takes more time than it takes in America. For example, if you're a Prime Amazon account holder, you get your things in 2 days, no matter how small it is.
Right.
But that's going to be a challenge for Jack Ma. How is he going to do it from overseas?
I don't know. We'll see. That will be a challenge because, as you said, the logistics in China, getting it from here to there. How about you? Are you going to use e-commerce on Alibaba? You can let us know by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia. Lynn, do you have a favorite app on your smartphone?
I think I do.
What is it?
It's called Meitu. It's in Chinese. Mm-hmm. Meitu means beautiful pictures.
Yeah.
So it's a photo editing app. You can do crop, you can do different effects, different layers, do mashups, and then make your pictures beautiful, you know.
Oh,
I have Asian
cool.
genes in me. I love to take pictures.
Oh, well, see, I take pictures, but I have a Photoshop app that I use.
Oh, that's smart. Well, I can't use that one because it's too smart.
Well, no, it's not too smart. It's a really, really basic thing. It sounds very much like the one you're talking about.
Okay.
It allows you to do cropping.
A lot of things.
Mm-hmm. You know, add like more saturation
layers,
or, you know, stuff like that. But
is that your favorite app?
No, it's not. As far as use, probably it's Gmail because I get all kinds of emails.
Okay.
And Facebook, but I wouldn't call those either my favorites. It's kind of like I can live without them if I have to.
But did you know there's an app that can help people who struggle with bipolar disorder?
No. That's
fascinating.
How does it do that? Yeah, I want to find out.
Well, as VOA's Jessica Berman found out, this app could help doctors detect early signs of mood alterations requiring immediate medical attention.
Bipolar disorder affects tens of millions of people around the world. Experts say 10 to 20% of them end up committing suicide. Bipolar individuals struggle with flights of mania, during which they behave impulsively, feel invincible, and often engage in high-risk activities. At the other emotional extreme, people with the mental condition battle severe depression. The disorder can ruin relationships and families. Researchers at the University of Michigan have developed a smartphone app designed to identify the first signs that a bipolar patient is becoming unstable. The project, dubbed Priori, is aimed at picking up subtle changes in the person's voice, suggestive of mood instability, so patients can be treated promptly before they spiral out of control. The app, which runs silently in the background as people talk on their cell phones, sends encrypted speech pattern data to a central computer that analyzes voice inflections and pacing. Psychiatrist Melvin McInnes is part of a team at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor that is testing the experimental app. He says it's best to pick up early signs of mania, since patients who advance to a full-blown manic episode often refuse treatment.
Whereas if someone develops more prominent hypomanic features, their insight is diluted to the point where they are unlikely to be amenable to intervention. So they're feeling that well that, hey, I'm feeling great and there's nothing wrong with me and don't bother me with increasing my medication because I am fine.
But they're not fine. Patients who are becoming manic may speak more quickly or louder than usual. McInnes says detecting early signs of a depressive episode is more difficult, as individuals may try to conceal their growing sense of hopelessness. In the year-long study, a small group of patients also checked in weekly with a healthcare provider for a clinical assessment. According to the World Health Organization, bipolar disorder is the sixth leading cause of disability worldwide. But experts say there's a shortage of psychiatrists and mental health workers. With billions of people now using mobile phones, McInnes believes the Priori app could make it easier for people in developing countries to get treatment quickly.
When an individual has a change or there's an identified change, the health system could be alerted and said, Mr. Jones or Mrs. Jones is in need of an intervention and should be called to the medical center to be evaluated further for interventions in their health.
Researchers unveiled the smartphone application at the International Conference on Acoustics, Speech, and Signal Processing meeting in Italy. McInnes says more studies of Priori are needed before it becomes widely available to doctors and bipolar patients. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
So what about you? Do you think this app is a good idea? Or maybe you think it intrudes on your privacy?
You can start a conversation about this on our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
The late Albert Einstein once said, look deep into nature, and then you will understand everything better.
Mathematician and scientist Simon Levin seems to have taken Einstein's advice to heart.
Levin is studying packs of wolves and schools of fish to help understand financial markets.
VOA's Michael Sullivan tells us Levin has won the prestigious Tyler Environmental Prize for his work.
Simon Levin is a trained mathematician who uses math to study biological systems. He says individuals and groups show similar behavior, whether they're wolves in the wild or traders on Wall Street.
Individuals are competing for limited resources, enter into cooperative arrangements, exploitative arrangements, parasitic arrangements, so they really are the same sort of phenomenon. So with some colleagues, I began looking at economic systems 2 decades ago.
In early 2008, Levin co-authored an article called Ecology for Bankers in the journal Nature, accurately predicting the financial collapse sparked by problems in the housing mortgage market. He says the complex financial and banking systems were showing signs of strain that, in the world of biology, would signal a coming crisis.
That the systems were becoming more and more interconnected, and when ecological systems become so interconnected, they run the risk of collapse.
He is now turning his attention to threats in the natural world as oceans and climate systems face increasing strains caused by human activity.
So we study fish schools, we study bird flocks. Of course, we can study groups of animals like wolves or wildebeest, and to understand how they're organized and to understand how they've dealt with the problems of collectives.
Levin says complex systems need resilient responses to cope with emerging threats, and that is a challenge in our interconnected world where global links create added stresses on fragile organizations. He says there are no easy answers as we cope with threats and complex global systems from climate change to financial crisis, but he says we humans have an advantage over our animal cousins because we can study the risks and devise effective responses. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
The Nintendo game company is responding to a social media protest over its new handheld game, Totemachi Life.
The game for the Nintendo DS system is a relationship and life game that allows players to create an avatar, interact with other players, and even get married.
The word totemachi in Japanese means friend, but the game doesn't allow same-sex couples to get married. That upset Mesa, Arizona gamer and gay man Ty Marini.
Marini said in a video that he is urging Nintendo and Nintendo of America to add same-sex relationship options to the game.
Now, the situation wouldn't be as big of a deal if it weren't for the fact that relationships and marriage are a huge part of the game. The relationships and interactions between me characters in the game, coupled with their relation to you in real life, are what makes this game so appealing.
The game, which was released in Japan last year, features a cast of so-called me characters. Gamers can do things like shop, visit an amusement park, get married, have children, and even encounter celebrities.
Marini said he had looked forward to playing the game, but it doesn't reflect his life.
That's why he started the hashtag MeQuality campaign on social media to urge Nintendo to change the game.
Marini stressed that he does not want supporters to boycott Nintendo or its subsidiaries. He's asking for people to write to the company and ask that the game be changed.
Nintendo responded by saying that the game is the same game that was originally designed in Japan, and the original code did not include gay characters.
But it brings up a cultural divide between Japan and the United States. Gay marriage is not legal in Japan, but is legal in several U.S. states.
So what do you think? Should Nintendo change the game?
Would you support changing the video game? Let us know your opinion by logging onto our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And you can send us an email by addressing it to voaasia@voanews.com.
And we're also on Twitter. Our address there is @NowVOAShow.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of Now.
If you want to hear any of our stories again, log on to our website, www.voaasia.com. voanews.com/now.
That's also where you can download the podcast, and we're also on iTunes.
If you have any questions or comments, log on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And you can follow us on Twitter. Our address there is @NowVOAShow.
And don't forget, you can email us at voaasia@voanews.com.
Patrice Martin produces our show.
The managing editor of VOA English is Diane Gao.
Join us again tomorrow for another edition of Now. Until then, I'm David Berg.
And I'm Lin Yang.
Thanks for listening.